Gene Homnick.
Hey, guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad
Evans. This is Diamond Salivary.
Hey, everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey, guys, this is Jason the Astronaut.
Hey, everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat. Coming to all of you listeners from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me, safely returned home, is Mr. Brendan Lear from his arduous trip to Saskatchewan. Brendan, how are you doing?
It was arduous.
It was.
I drove through a patch of butterflies on the way home that was probably 600 kilometers long.
Really?
And the butterfly massacre was not easy on the mind of my young child.
Yes, I could see that being a harrowing and horrifying experience.
I actually also got so fat that I couldn't wear the same shorts that I drove down in.
Just living off mom's grub and whatnot?
So, I kind of felt like one of those grizzly bears that, you know, stand in the stream and catch salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. A good comparison.
Except I was catching cookies.
See, I used to be like that when I used to go to my Nana's house. I exactly know what you're talking about. There's never enough food inside your belly, according to them.
Good for the soul.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
you know,
what are we doing today?
Yeah, I'm sure
the
listening audience doesn't really give a damn about your trip to Saskatchewan, to be honest. But
my brain is addled by cookie overdose. You have to fill me in on what the hell's going on.
We got another huge show, as always. You know, we continue to deliver a high quality product. We've got the Crippler Chris Lieben will be coming on the show to talk about his upcoming fight. Against Jorge Santiago, August 17th, Ultimate Fight Night, which is coming up right away next Thursday. And then
Cat Smasher, yes,
I agree. We will have to ask him about why the change in nickname. And, the Big Frog, Jeff Curran, one of the world's better 145-pound fighters. He's kind of flown under the radar, I'd say, or I think others would say so as well, over the last couple of years, you know, due to the fact that North America doesn't have any high-profile 145-pound divisions, and now it's starting to build with you know, guys like Urijah Faber, etc. But yeah, he's got a fight coming up against Hatsu Hioki, the shooto lightweight or 145-pound fighter who beat Mark Hominick for his TKO title a couple months back. He's going to be taking on Hioki at the upcoming Pride Bushido, the second round of the tournament, August 27th. So yeah.
Is that fight going to affect the Hominick rematch in TKO, do you know?
I obviously it would have to depend on what happens in the fight. I can't see Stefan, you know, as far as from the point of view from Mark Hominick or Stefan Patry, the TKO promoter, you wouldn't think that if Hioki lost, that they wouldn't offer Mark a rematch still. I know that was part of his contract, which we talked about with Mark when he was on our show, you know, I guess now it's a while ago. Month ago, 6 weeks ago, but anything can happen in a fight. So, you know, to say Hioki will be ready to go only a month later, he could get injured, or you know, who knows what's going to happen. But the TKO website is advertising that fight, so I'm sure it's contingent upon Hioki's health and how he's doing after the Jeff Curran fight. But it's an interesting sideline because Jeff Curran has helped train Mark Hominick a lot in his jiu-jitsu and his involvement in Team Tompkins for their jiu-jitsu program, so we'll be talking to him about that for sure.
Sounds good, my friend.
All right, well, let's get right to it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Militich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton, plus the historic supermatch of Militich versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League, pure sport. For more information, go to ifl.tv.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvers with Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is the Crippler, Chris Lieben. Chris, how are you doing today, man?
Not too bad.
Very well, very well. You're down training with Team Quest, I understand.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
So how is the training coming along? You've got a fight coming up against Jorge Santiago August 15th. August 17th, the Ultimate Fight Night. How's your preparation coming along, Chris?
Same as always. I'm in real good shape. I've been getting a lot of rounds in, came down to Quest Gym for a couple weeks, training with the guys, getting a lot of different bodies, working with, Matt Wimlin and, Ed Herman, Chris Wilson, Ryan Schultz, a bunch of guys. So, it's going great. It's going tougher than ever.
Chris, do you mind if we call you the Cat Smasher instead of the Crippler?
Why is that?
Because the Cat Smasher is a fine, maybe the best nickname in all of MMA, and the Crippler is, it's like a wrestling nickname.
Yeah, okay, well, you can call me whatever you want. Call me CZ if you'd like.
I'll call you Sir. How about that? So, Chris, my first question to you is obviously, you've talked a lot about your last fight in the UFC. And one of the things that I wondered about that fight is that what was your game plan going into that? Was your game plan to stand right from the beginning? And why? I guess the big question is why wouldn't you just try and take down Anderson Silva right off the bat?
Well, that was kind of in the game plan. I was planning to take him down, to move forward, cover, push the pace, try to clinch him, put him on his back. Bottom line is, when I went out to fight, and in the case before, I've had, fights where I don't really wake up until I get hit once or twice, and then I start fighting, moving well. I went out a little flat-footed, swang a little too hard, overextended myself, opened up, left my chin right out there, and I don't care who you are, you catch a clean one on the chin like that, it's going to rock you. In this game, man, but you just can't make mistakes like that, And I went out there and I made some real big technical errors. He capitalized on it. My game plan wasn't to go out and get knocked out, I had planned to take him down, but you drive a car long enough, you're going to get in a wreck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Chris, there's a lot of varying speculation from, fans and MMA reporters, writers, etc. afterwards about the game plan going in for you against Anderson Silva, and, we just talked about that. But I guess my question to you is, what was your reaction to some of the fans? There's certain people out there who said, hey, look, this proves that some of the fighters coming out of the Ultimate Fighter show are not world-class caliber. And even a couple of the guys that, some of the fighters that have been on our show, agreed with that notion, but your name actually came up a couple times as the one, one of the guys that shouldn't be cast into that lot as far as being like a subpar or not a world class fighter. So I guess what were your thoughts?
Can I cuss on your radio show?
What's that?
Can I cuss?
Sure.
Sure.
We're Canadians. We don't take offense to that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, I feel like that's fucking ridiculous. That's how I feel about it. I mean, seriously, you win 5 fights in a row. You lose one, and all of a sudden you're a piece of crap, and you don't deserve anything, and yada yada. Well, I've had almost 30 fights now, and I've won most of them. Anderson Silva, he's a freaking tough guy, Mm-hmm. I made a mistake. He caught me. Whatever happened to patting the winner on the back and giving him credit where credit is due instead of just hating on the loser and everybody instantly looks at me, Well, he's a great fighter. He's beat a lot of great fighters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. I've beat some pretty good guys too, you know. You know, every dog has their day.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you were probably coming off the show one of the most, you know, one of the most famous MMA fighters after coming off the reality show in the world, arguably, you know, at least in North America. So how much of that affected the way you trained, affected your self-image? And have you had to change that now after a loss? And what's your relationship now to your fans, to the crowds, to people who talked, you know, on the forums or whoever, you know, radio host, talking heads, or whatever? Has that changed the way you view others?
Yeah, a little bit, definitely. I mean, I get sick of going to get a couple of, you know, Starbucks and having the guy try to tell me what I should have done, you know? It's like I haven't thought about it, you know? Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, this isn't what I do for a living, and I haven't dedicated my life to the sport. And just sometimes people just don't understand that, you know, I had a good game plan going in there, just it went wry. I made some mistakes, and I'm the first one to admit that, you know? And, you know, the thing I'd say is, you know, as far as people on the forum go, you know what, there are people that don't like me are always going to wait for, you know, a chance where they can capitalize, and put me down or whatever, you know. I saw a video where they edited, you know, all the things I was saying before the fight and then edited into the fight, like it's fun, like, you know, me putting my foot in my mouth. Well, yeah, I went into the fight planning to win. Guess what? You sit behind the computer and edit footage, you know? You're not in the cage fighting, you know? And if you're going to go in and fight, you obviously have to plan to win. You can't go in, you know, thinking you're going to lose. You have to have full confidence in yourself. And I mean, I just, you know, basically my philosophy is, you know what? My friends and my family are the same friends and family I've always had. That I love the people around me. You know, I'm not on the internet at all whatsoever. I never check up on, you know, the underground or anything and see what everybody's saying about me. I get enough fight information by hanging out with all the pro fighters I hang out with. I know what's going on. You know what I mean? I'm on the inside loop. I don't need to check all that stuff, and frankly, I don't care. It doesn't matter about me. I'm you know, I'm here to hang out, live my life, have a good time doing it, you know, do what I enjoy doing. That's fight and win. And that's, you know, that's my philosophy. Screw 'em.
Well, Chris, I mean, like I said, some of the fighters that came on here, you know, they mentioned your name as, you know, one of the better fighters to come out of the reality series, and they mentioning that in all three of the seasons. So there's definitely some of the guys who are supporting you. But I guess, you know, with looking at someone like Anderson Silva, do you think part of the reason that you had so many critics or people just, you know, flat out annoying you is some of these fans, some of the new fans to the sport who have been introduced to MMA through the reality show
didn't know who he was, yeah.
You know, they didn't know who Anderson Silva was, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, the fact that some people...
Well, that was kind of my thought going into this fight. That's kind of what I told the UFC. I said, well, you know, yeah, I'd love to fight Anderson Silva, but wouldn't it be better if he fought a couple times, built him up in North America, then had him fight me and made a big deal about the fight? You know, so just throwing him right in there with me. Obviously, they got different. I don't know. It's just one of those things. A lot of people didn't understand who he was. Me being a fan of Sporticals, I've watched almost all of his fights, and I knew what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you seem to be a lot more philosophical about your performance, and you seem to be a lot more focused now. Have you matured, do you think, since the show? Because you were portrayed in the show as being kind of mentally susceptible to the ups and downs. Do you think you've matured, or do you think that was just a misrepresentation of you?
Well, you know, a little of both. I mean, I'll be honest with you guys, I'm a big sap. I'm an emotional dude, you know. Somebody says something to me, you know, if one of my friends says something to me, it hurts my feelings, I might just even start crying. That's me. I'll never change. That's the kind of guy I am. That's why a lot of people love me for it. I'm straight up. I tell you how I feel, you know, and you know if something's wrong with me, if something's bothering me, I'm not a, you know, I don't procrastinate about that sort of thing. As far as fighting goes, you know, yeah, I mean, after the fight, yeah, guess what? I went backstage and freaked out, you know, because I was upset to lose. Nobody wants to lose, and I take it worse than a lot of people, but... You know, hindsight's 20/20, and now I've had the chance to look back, reflect on the fight, and build on it. You know, and that's kind of where I sit now. You know, is this, you know, is exactly what I said. It's how, is, you know, where my views are you know, now that I'm calm when I'm calm. if you would have asked me right after the fight, you might have heard a little different story.
Well, let's move on. Let's get into, you know, the real reason we have I have you on the show right now, and that's to talk about your upcoming fight against Santiago. Chris, what do you expect your opponent's going to want to do against you that night? Do you expect him to want to stand or go to the ground with you?
He won his last fight striking. I know he comes out and likes to strike. He's a black belt in a Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so I think this is one of those fights where you go, okay, if he wants to strike with me, let's do it out. I got a feeling I've got heavier hands than him. I got a feeling most of the time it's a bad idea to stand and strike with me. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. I don't know that he's a great wrestler, so I don't know he's gonna really be able to take me down, when I'm working with Matt Lindland and Chael Sonnen and all these really great guys at shooting and try to take me down. I'm defending against them, so I'd be interested to see if he could take me down, put me on my back. If he puts me on my back, I'm back up to my feet. I may just take him down, pass his guard, because Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu isn't too effective against a really tough wrestler. When you put them on their back, pass their gun, elbow them in their face, all of a sudden it gets kind of hard to get an armbar.
Yeah.
So, Chris, regarding this fight, you came up as a Team Quest fighter, and then you started training with Matt Hume at AMC. Is this movement back just a natural movement back? Is it a permanent move, or are you just going to keep on going back and forth? Do you have that kind of relationship with both teams?
Actually, yeah, I really do. Matt Hume is my coach, Robert Falls is my coach. I love them both to death. They offer different things. Training with them offers different things, and I think by training with both of them, it's really, I have, these two powerhouses of MMA, within driving distance. Why wouldn't I, in my right mind, take advantage of both clubs?
Yeah. Well,
it's not a loyalty thing or anything like that. We're all friends. We get along, it's financially everything works out. So it's, I really love the situation I'm in where, I can go hang out in Seattle and train, or I can hang out in Portland where I was born and train.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that same night, and there's a fight that I'm assuming that you'll have a invested interest in the outcome of, and that's Josh Koscheck versus Jonathan Goulet. And I don't know if you saw the footage of your last fight, but there was a quick camera shot of Koscheck, and he seemed to be rather happy about the result of the fight. I'm not trying to stir the pot too much or anything, but what do you think of that fight, Chris? Do you think Jonathan Goulet has got a chance against Josh Koscheck?
Yeah, I think he does. Koscheck though is, if I was a betting man, I'd have to put my money on Koscheck. He's just been getting, he's been improving, exponentially since I've watched. Mm-hmm. Still, I hate his guts and think he's a total piece of crap, but he was getting better as a fighter, yeah. So, if I was going to bet, even though I hate him, I'd probably still put my money on him.
Well, we had Jonathan on last week, and he had told us that he's been concentrating a lot on his wrestling, been training with George St. Pierre, who is building a very solid reputation up here in Canada as possibly being an MMA fighter who could actually make the Canadian Olympic wrestling team. So Jonathan seems to be working on a game plan to counter Josh's wrestling.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Chris, sorry, I don't make it sound like you're looking past this fight, but what do you see, how do you see in the next couple of years for you unfolding in the UFC? So where are you positioned right now contractually, and how do you see the next couple of years unfolding for you?
You never know. You just never know. Going on the show, I never knew it was going to be this big. Going into the UFC, I didn't know if they're going to have me for one fight or two or three or four. Now I'm at number seven. Eventually I'd like to get the title, and I hope that, I got a year and a half before, my contract runs out. I'd hope the UFC would, step up and really, kind of reward me for everything I've done for them and give me some ducats to stay around, otherwise, who knows what's going to happen. Truthfully, I'm American, I want to fight here, I don't really want to go overseas, but money talks. You can understand that, right?
Yeah, you can understand that.
Well, money doesn't talk for Kelsey and I because we don't hear it at all. So, but I hear it. I understand that that's how it does talk to some people.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
One of the names that I want to throw out at you as a possible opponent in the future is someone you've beaten before, and I know he's gone on the record a couple times saying he would love a rematch with you, and that's Patrick Cote. Chris, what are your thoughts on a possible rematch with Patrick? Do you think it's warranted in the future, or do you just think that, you know, he should accept that you beat him?
Great guy. We had a great fight. I'm a lot better fighter and in a lot better shape now than when I fought him, though. So, you know, I mean, you know, whatever they want, I guess. I mean, he wouldn't be on my list. I already beat him. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't give everybody I've already beat a rematch.
Yeah.
You know, if everything came together, you know, he comes back to the UFC, he wins a couple fights in a row, and we're kind of, you know, jockeying for the same position, well, certainly, yeah, that makes sense. But right now, you know, I wouldn't mind watching him, you know, beat a couple, you know, give him Deweese, let him beat up on Deweese or something first, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of these, you know, these guys that aren't quite as tough, and then, you know, then let them step up to start, you know, avenging all his losses. I mean, it's kind of tough, you know, if you lost a couple in the UFC, then you come back and you want to just avenge your losses, man, I might start fresh. I'm going to say, let me get some different opponents.
What do you think? What do you think about all these rematches? Are you eagerly anticipating Tito Ortiz, Ken Shamrock number three, or do you think it's kind of you think it's going to the well once too often?
Yeah, I exactly think that. I mean, and you know, like I said in my talks, and it all comes down to ticket sales, and we know that'll sell a lot of tickets, but it's not a fight I'm particularly interested to watch.
Yeah, are you?
Well, Stefan, I'm excited to watch. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that should be a barn burner, to say the least.
That's a rematch that should have happened a year ago. You know, I mean. That one is definitely warranted. I mean, Tito Shamrock, you know, why, you want to watch the same thing happen again?
Yeah, well, there's definitely some who feel that way. There's no question. And also today, it appears that Pride is making some noise, talking about having a Super Bowl, quote unquote, of MMA sometime next summer, as they're set to have their first card in October, and they're talking about putting up. They're champions against all the UFC champions, and I mean, there's a long ways to go until that happens. But Chris, you as a fighter, I mean, you've got to be excited about the prospect, I would assume, of a cross promotional fight.
Oh yeah, Vandalay Chucks. I mean, that's just a super fighter he's been dreaming about for years.
Yeah.
But
Brendan, do you got anything else for Chris?
Well, who's your dream opponent then in Pride or in K1, Chris?
I don't know. There's a couple. I wouldn't mind fighting Musaki. You know, he fought. I went over and cornered against him when he fought Ed Herman a couple years ago, and he beat Ed Herman. And then he had a really good match with Dan Henderson, and he just seems like a fun guy to fight.
Do you see
yourself as having to face being apprehensive about facing any one of the great Team Quest guys that are coming up behind you? So Ed Herman, say for instance, would you ever fight him in the UFC?
No, I quit before I'd ever fight him.
Yeah,
there's just no way. He's one of my best buds. He comes over for barbecues. We go out and drink beers together. I mean, you know, he's like a brother to me. And you can't get in the, you know, I don't care what people say. You know, oh, it's a sport. You're doing your job. Yeah, to an extent. I'm not hitting my family. That's the bottom line. I train with them every day. I beat them. You know, we beat each other up in here every day. I'm not going to get in a cage and you know, I don't want to know who would win. You know what I mean? That's just how I feel about that. I don't want to know. You know, so.
So am I to understand that legitimate drinking establishments actually let you and Ed Herman in together?
Sometimes, a lot of times they kick us out together too, though.
Chris, my last question for you, and then we'll let you get back to training. I know you're busy as you get ready for the fight coming up, but you care to make a prediction on your upcoming fight with Santiago?
I see me winning by ground and pound, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I see me ground and pounding him out. Maybe even all the way till the third. That's the fight I've been training for. A long, hard battle where, you know, I win with elbows in the third round.
Well, you heard it here first here, folks. And, Brendan, do you have anything else for Chris before we let him out of here?
No, that's it. Thanks a lot, Chris. We appreciate you coming on the show, and good luck to you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat-out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moa must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moa before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter. Joining us now is the big frog, Jeff Curran. Jeff, you're out in Minnesota right now?
You got it.
What's going on down there? Are you doing some training for your upcoming fight in Minnesota?
Yeah, I got out of town a little bit to try and avoid answering phones and, you know, just being around the busyness that surrounds my gym on a daily basis, you know. So I came up here to Minnesota to work out with Greg Nelson and Sean Shirk and all those guys just to have different bodies to move around with and stuff like that.
Now, of course, you're talking about your upcoming fight, August 27th in Pride Bushido. Jeff's going to be taking on Hatsu Hioki. Now, basically, how is your training coming along for the Hioki fight? Everything's coming, going as planned?
Yeah, never been better. I'm feeling like this is a chance for me to really make a, not just win a fight, but hopefully make a statement just overall. Mm-hmm. And establish myself, you know, in a little bit more dominating fashion as a lightweight fighter and somebody to keep an eye on, you know, as things progress for the lighter division.
Now, against someone like Hioki, do you have a game plan that you're going to look to implement, or are you just one of those fighters that's going to go in and just see where the fight dictates the action is?
Yeah, I don't really feel like he has an advantage in any area of the fight. I'll know more about that the first few minutes in, obviously, but I'm comfortable. I'd like to say I'm comfortable standing with him. If the range and the reach, because he's a lot taller than I am, starts to play a factor, then, you know, I'll definitely be looking to clinch and take him down. But I have no problem standing with him. He doesn't look like he hits very hard, and I don't think he's got what it takes to put me down. So.
Now, Jeff, you've been involved in helping the Team Tompkins fighters with their jiu-jitsu game. Were you in Mark Komenek's corner in his TKO fight against Hioki in which he lost?
No, I was unfortunately in all his other last few fights other than that one. Scheduling didn't work out. I think it was just a quick notice that it was taking place, and there just wasn't really room for travel and stuff, and you know, Sean is pretty confident, and Margaret's pretty confident that, you know, they can get the job done, obviously, without me. So I think Mark just had a little bit more dealing, you know, to deal with in that fight than people understand. So it goes into his personal life a little bit, and it is what it is. I think he'll do fine next time he fights.
Now you're alluding to that, and which is kind of, you know, somewhat of a weird situation for those who don't know or weren't familiar with the fact that you help Team Tompkins on their jiu-jitsu side of it. And, in fact, yeah, Mark Komenek is scheduled to fight Hatsu Hioki. He had a mandatory rematch in their clause with their last fight. And he's scheduled to fight him September 29th, I believe, and at the next TKO and at the Bell Centre, Montreal, Quebec. Have you talked to Mark? Has he given you any tips on his thoughts of Hioki, considering that he just recently fought him?
I said after I watched the fight, before I even knew I was fighting Hioki, I sent him an email breaking down just the first round of the fight and where I think that he just had a few key things he could have done just to change the pace of the last two rounds, because in a fight like that, the second and third round don't mean anything when he made a few crucial mistakes in the first round. So had he just, thrown her an overhand right after escaping the triangle, for example, and caught him on the chin a few times, I think that the guy's guard performance and his overall game would have been a lot different, and Mark would have been able, to prevent him in a later round. So, I don't think it'll be a problem for Mark next time he fights. I don't know if it's happening at the end of September. There's a little bit of a hold on confirming it, just to see how Hioki does in a fight with me. For example, if he comes out injured or something like that, and wanting more time to prepare for his title defense. So there's a good chance that Hamnick might not be fighting him, as soon as we think.
Yeah, that's good that you mentioned that. I shouldn't say that he's actually scheduled for sure. We had Stefan Patry on the show, I guess that was a couple weeks ago, you're right. He just mentioned that if all things considered, everything went without Hioki, getting injured or anything, that Mark really wants to fight him. And we've had Mark on the show as well, and he really wants to fight Hioki for a rematch. And you're right. I mean, anything can happen, and that fight is not, it's not a guarantee, that's for sure.
Right.
For some of our Canadian listeners or American listeners who are becoming more and more, increasingly more familiar with Team Tompkins, just maybe elaborate a little bit for them on your involvement with them and how that relationship came about.
Well, my relationship with Sean and Mark and Sam, I don't like to say the whole entire Team Tompkins because I haven't had a chance to work with everybody, but I befriended Sean a long time ago, years back, meeting him at a Super Brawl. When Mark was fighting, we all became friends, and Sean started sending him up to get some jiu-jitsu help. And, Sean was awesome in a sense that when I needed some help covering classes and holding pads for me and helping me get ready for a fight, he would come up. And it was a non-money exchange kind of back and forth, and it was perfect. And now what's happening, honestly, is that, my career is moving one direction. Sam and Mark are moving, everybody's moving so fast through their careers, and everybody's really starting to demand some help from Sean. I mean, he's getting all over the world, all over the globe right now, it seems, trying to hold pads for guys and train them and get them ready for fights, because, he's got a great game plan, when it comes to the striking. So I don't want to say I withdraw myself from Team Tompkins, but I definitely have to step back, let those guys go their own way so I can focus myself on what I'm doing, because there's just, otherwise everybody's spread a little too thin. And of course I'm always here for Mark, I'm always here for Sam, and that's basically what it comes down to. If Sean needs to send them up, he could send them up, and I'm, open doors there for those guys. So that's kind of where we stand. I mean, we were trying to build a little bit different of a team effort for a while, but this sport's getting really crazy, and there's so many people that we're all connected with. I think it's just, it's almost impossible to make something that big work,
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but, it's an unofficial affiliation, I guess you could say.
Right.
It is what it is, I got Eric Schaefer, who I manage, has a fight coming up, and it just so happens to be against a Team Tompkins guy, Rob McDonald. Well, Rob's right. My friend, Sean's my friend, Eric Schaefer's my friend. I don't train with Eric Schaefer, but we're both affiliated under Pedro Sauer. So I just wanted to help him out. He got his UFC shot, and I have to say, yeah, we'll take the fight. It's nothing personal. Business is business. Let's let these two guys go get it on,
Yeah, and it seems like that those type of things are happening much more frequently than they used to. Let's get back to yourself a little bit, and you know, you mentioned the affiliation and the fact that you are an instructor under the Pedro Sauer branch of jiu-jitsu. Let's just for some of our other listeners here, tell us a little bit about your background, Jeff, and where how you got to the point where, yeah, I mean, you're the jiu-jitsu instructor for many different fighters, and as well as some of your striking and stand-up background.
Well, my initial exposure to jiu-jitsu was through Megaton, who is, placed many times in the world championships, and that's where I got my start, is taking seminars and training with him and stuff like that with some friends. We parted our own ways. I was looking for something a little different, I guess, than what he was offering. I had trained with the Carlson Gracie team for a little while in Chicago. The drive was way too big, and their school was growing at a rapid pace. And I looked to settle down a little bit more just with a group of guys and train. And at that time, I met Pedro Sauer through Frank Cucci out in Virginia Beach, and Frank is my original Thai boxing trainer, Thai boxing mentor. He's the guy that basically showed me what Thai boxing was, you know. And so Frank Cucci, Pedro Sauer, we all became, you know, a real tight-knit group, and everybody focused on developing the younger guys like me, you know, technically, and making sure that we were guided in the right direction. And then fortunate enough 5 years ago to meet my boxing coach, Doug Mango, who just like completely cleaned up my boxing and got me started in a pro career there. Now I just need to feel confident throwing punches in MMA. I'm always wanting to clinch.
Yeah, well, it is.
So that's kind of how my training went. It, you know, I've been training jiu-jitsu since the very first UFC, since probably 6 months before that. I was training jiu-jitsu at a little club that had out by me that had some guys running a ground fighting class based on Gracie jiu-jitsu, and when Hoist fought, I was like, hey, that guy does what I do. And later to come find out that I was just a drop in the bucket, you know, and I was doing what he did.
Now, if you look at your record, you know, it's quite obviously been in the ring with some great fighters and hold, you know, some key victories over people like Antonio Carvalho, Barry Yoshida, just to name a couple, Ryan Ackerman. And then you've also had the privilege, I guess some would say, being in the ring with Kid Yamamoto, who's gone on to, you know, some extreme successes in Japan. You know, after your UFC appearance, and you were fighting at 155, I believe, for that fight, and I know you typically fight at 145, is the fact that Japan has, you know, so much more to offer for fighters of your size, and there's so much more caliber fighters fighting at that weight, and they make it more available than, let's say, the UFC, who still hasn't introduced that division. Is that part of the reason that, you know, you must be, like you mentioned earlier, very excited to be heading to an organization like Pride?
Yeah, the fact is, you know, when UFC has a 145-pound division, and, you know, the money is available for the lighter fighters as it is for the heavier fighters, you know, ultimately having a wife and my gym and everything in the United States, I'd love to be, you know, in the national scene, you know, more than I would just in the international scene, because these are where my friends and family live, you know, and my students and stuff. But fighting in Japan in Pride, it's a good financial move. It's going to be really stable, and I think that their organization is going to you know, just grow and prosper and keep pace and compete with the UFC, and everybody's just going to keep growing. So I don't think it's going to be tied to one or the other. As the sport grows, I think fighters are going to be going back and forth a lot more, and just you know, kind of sharing the overall success of the sport. At least that's what I hope.
Well, yeah, and now that it's been announced that, you know, in October, Pride will be having their first North American card, and their president, Sagabara, released a statement or some comments in a press conference the other day alluding to the fact that Pride was going to be holding more events in North America next year, and that they would love to do some cross promotions with the UFC, have their champions fight each other. So, I mean, you could look at the fact that if Pride has more cards in North America and they have 145-pound fighters on the roster, that, you know, that might push the UFC into introducing a bantamweight or featherweight division, whatever you want to call it, at 145 pounds.
Right. And, you know, take boxing, for example. You got WBA, WBF, WBO, all these organizations at key times in fighters' careers, they have to pull together to unify a belt to determine really who's the champ of the world. Every organization seems to have a world title these days, which is fine. But if those world champs don't, from each organization, don't get a chance to fight against each other, there really can't be a world champion. So, you know, and fight by fight it changes, of course. But I think that if Pride, if UFC, if, you know, the WFA continues to grow, if the IFL continues to grow, and they're doing their single bouts and having their, maybe their super fight champions or whatever, if they start to unify the belts, unify the divisions, now we're going to get a true champion, and it's going to be exciting for the fans.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
I think
the organizations get credit for it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and exactly, the fans are the ones who stand to benefit the most out of that. Jeff, when you look at the 145-pound division and put a little bit of leeway there with a few pounds here or there, but when you look at a tournament like this last weekend in K1 where you had great fighters like Ivan Menjivar participating, Cal Uno, then you have someone like Paquino Nogueira who actually lost to Boku. Do you have any sights on where, insight on where you would rank yourself and who might be some of the top 145-pound fighters in the world that you might like to fight?
I rank myself pretty high, to be honest with you, and I don't know, I don't know who the key guy to fight is to beat, to prove that. It seems like you take Urijah Faber, he's getting tons of press and tons of hype, and deservingly so. He's, you know, he's tearing it up. So somebody like him is definitely a fight that I think needs to happen. I want it, and I want it to happen, you know, as soon as it can happen. I would be ready for it, and I think that'd be a great fight. So he's somebody that needs to be looked at. Menjivar, I have a loss to Menjivar from 4 years ago.
Right.
Maybe even more. Maybe, I think that was maybe 2001 even. I don't know exactly, but
2002.
That was a start of a new phase in my fight career when I fought Menjivar, and he was coming down from 170, and I took the fight thinking it was at 150, and it turned out to be at 155. Long week before, you know, no excuse, but you know, I was a different fighter then. I wasn't submerged in training, and I wasn't submerged in making this a living. I was doing it in between running classes and competing in jiu-jitsu. So since Menjivar, we're both different fighters. I would love to fight Menjivar again. I would love to fight Kid Yamamoto again. Obviously, so far nobody's beat him in MMA. Nobody's even gone to the decision with the guy. His one loss is kind of a fluke. They stopped it due to a cut in like 30 seconds, and that's it. No one else has lasted with the guy but me. And I think that right there, putting Kid at the top of the food chain in the division, I think is only right. And then putting some of my key wins up there, I definitely, you know, put me in the top five, maybe the top three. Some people think I'm number two. It depends. It's opinion at this point.
Well, and with Yamamoto recently announcing that he's going to pursue his wrestling side of his career and neglect MMA for the next couple of years, looking to get into the Olympics 2008, you know, that takes away, for the sounds of it, it takes his participation in MMA away. He won't be fighting for a couple of years, so, you know.
Well, the good thing about that, there's goods and bads about that, in my opinion. Even Kit said in the translated interview that when he comes back from, you know, his career, training with the Olympic team and wrestling, he's going to be, I mean, just take 2 months or a month and train with the Olympic wrestling team, and you're going to develop, you know, his strength, his endurance, his desire to win is going to go way up. And I'm sure that he's coming from the mixed martial arts training that he's been, I'm sure that he's going to find time to continue to develop his MMA, his Thai boxing a little bit. He's going to have a little balance because of what he's already been exposed, you know. He's going to want it more. And that's the bad thing, is that he will come back strong, and he'll come back confident as ever, and he'll come back with more ammunition behind him and more money and power behind him than you could imagine any fighter in the sport to have. He's a hero over there. And the bad part is, while he's doing that, you know, I'm still in the ring, I'm still in the cage, I'm still, you know, developing as a fighter every day. And just the longer I wait, the hungrier I get. He's the one fight that someday, hopefully, I get a chance to take another shot. I have nothing to lose.
Now, looking at your last fight against Charles Bennett, and now, you know, with the recent signing with Pride, was there, you know, I mean, obviously you're probably elated about the fact that Pride signed you, but, I mean, have you been looking at guys like that for the last couple of years who basically just put on a show and aren't known for having any key wins over any notable fighter, and yet they continue to be brought back for entertainment value to promotions in Japan? Did you have any thoughts on that? I mean, was it kind of a sense of satisfaction in beating someone like Charles Bennett, or was it just, you know, something you expected to do and you were just patiently waiting for your turn at the big show, quote unquote?
Yeah, I really didn't give him any respect. I fought a couple guys similar to his style, just, you know, dangerous if they catch you with a punch, and, you know, wild and not versed in submissions. And, you know, my last time fighting somebody, and I'm not going to say who, but the last time fighting somebody like Bennett, I remember going into my locker room and just, I had so much doubt going into that fight. And after I rolled through the guy, I was just like, you know what, I'm never going to doubt myself again against these guys. I don't even feel they deserve to be in there. They don't deserve, if they're not going to hang out at the gym all day long like I would, or like Faber would, or Menjivar would, they don't deserve to be in there. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Gladly we'll take them as bait and take the food and eat it up and take it for what it's worth, because maybe it helped me get Pride. Maybe it just, you know, people's perception of who's a good fighter sometimes is based on popularity. It has nothing to do with technique.
Yeah.
Or actual physical ability as a fighter. And I didn't respect him. I didn't like his antics in the ring. I don't like the way he acted. I don't think he's a bad guy, but I don't like the clownish entertainment angle that, you know, is distasteful, and it takes that route. Be entertaining, wave to the fans, you know, wear a freaky outfit, or, you know, do a crazy dance, whatever. But he goes off the hook with it, and but to me that's just not cool. It's not good for the sport, and it makes us look like we're WWE style wrestling. So.
Well, I'm sure that there's, I know for a fact, there's plenty of people who would agree with you on in exactly what you just said. On that note, Jeff, I'll let you get some sleep. I know you got you've been busy training down there in Minnesota, and as you get ready for your upcoming fight, August 27th. So we thank you, Jeff, for coming on the show, and all the best of luck.
No problem.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against jiu-jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Claws led by Mark Coleman battling the Toronto Dragons coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League.
your sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter. Brendan, some interesting comments from both Jeff Kern and Chris Lieben.
Yeah, for sure. It was. We haven't spoken to Lieben yet in this program, so it was good to hear from them. And he seems to be. He seems to at least on the face of it have rebounded quite well mentally from that defeat to Anderson Silva.
Yeah, and he kind of got a little agitated when we were mentioning the fact that certain fighters out there and fans alike have also, you know, started to sort of rag on some of the fighters that have come out of the Ultimate Fighter show and talk about the fact that, you know, perhaps some of them aren't world class. And I think he, you know, he was kind of upset and maybe didn't really fully understand that what, you know, I was trying to say to him is that although some fighters have said that to us on the air, off the air, you know, his name and Diego Sanchez and Josh Berkman are a couple of the fighters who have been mentioned as you know, given as examples of some of the talent, you know, the higher talent that have come out of that program.
And I think you see that. That kind of frustration on forums and things like that with people who may not be up to speed in their only education about MMA comes from watching the TV show and some pay per views. So. I think the fighters for sure will feel that kind of frustration as well, especially, you know, Lieben's situation. You know, he was coming off all those big wins and then fighting someone who probably very few people had ever seen fight before and then getting so roundly thrashed that it was probably a big shock for those who didn't see Anderson Silva before, didn't expect it coming.
Yeah, and he's in for a tough fight against Santiago. I haven't seen Santiago fight too many times, but I don't expect it to be a cakewalk for Lieben. Santiago has shown some abilities both standing and on the ground, so I think it will be an entertaining fight and could be one of the better fights next Thursday.
Well, the American top team seems to be firing on all cylinders. You know, I think every one of their fighters, you know, except for one, has won their fight in the last big fights, and they've all looked terrific. You know, K1, they had a big win on the weekend as well. So I don't know what they're putting in the water down there, but it sure is working.
Yeah, we should get into that, and a little bit of a spoiler here, in case some of you are waiting for the pay-per-view, which I don't even know, up in Canada, I'm not even sure when it's supposed to be shown. The first round, or the last time they showed K1 Heroes, I think it was delayed. I think it was a month, so it took a long time. So I'm not sure what it's going to be like in the States for pay-per-view, but let's get into some of the K1 stuff. And again, if you're waiting for the pay-per-view and have somehow managed to avoid any information on the results on your Full Contact Fighter, any of the sites, you might want to turn off the show right now because we're going to discuss it. Brendan, you had a buddy, I guess, who was able to see it in Japan and told you a lot. It's almost as if you saw it in a way, but... You know, you didn't, but, you know, he was able to tell you everything about the fights.
Absolutely everything. Yeah, it was remarkable.
So, what were his thoughts on the card? I mean, did he think it was a good show?
I think overall it was a great card. The standout fights were Menjivar, of course, it was the fight of the night, Menjivar-Tokoro. Great fight, fantastic fight between these guys. Tokoro gained his fame, I guess, recently as drawing Gracie. I think was it the New Year's card in K1?
Yeah, I think so.
Which is a terribly boring fight. And this fight was spectacular, absolutely spectacular. Great back and forth in the first round. Menjivar probably dominated the first round. Definitely won the first round. The second round, Menjivar completely dominated. Had Tokoro's back for much of it, but Tokoro got in a really tight armbar right at the very, very end of the round, and it looked like I wouldn't be surprised if Menjivar hurt himself getting out of it, but he did get out of it, and then won what looked to be a split decision, although...
It's been listed as majority in some parts of
the translation. The translation of the decision didn't really peek through to me.
Yeah, and if people get a chance to see the Northern Touch, which is my Canadian weekly column on Full Contact Fighter, there are some comments there from Ivan, and he does talk about the fact that he was scared. He thought he controlled the fight, but essentially that last minute armbar, he said that he was concerned that perhaps it might have swayed enough judges to give it to Carl. But that guy, Ivan Menjivar, I think a lot of people are going to start paying attention to the fact that he's a great fighter, and he could be definitely doing some things at 145 pounds.
Well, it would be interesting to see if he could work his way back up to 155 and fight back in North America. But for sure, he's got to be one of the favorites to win that little tournament now, because no one really looked as good or solid as he did. It was a spectacular fight, by far the best of the night.
I also talked to Coulter Gill, and he was pretty happy with his performance, all things considered. Of course, he would have liked to get the win, but Brendan, apparently Coulter Gill, it sounds like he landed a very hard right knee to Cal Uno and almost stopped the fight before Cal Uno, to his credit, came back and ended up choking out Coulter in the second round.
Yeah, the fight legitimately, I think, could have been stopped at that point, but again, because it was Uno, I think they allowed him to continue, and it was actually a very sort of a very scary effort of Uno to recover after that knee, and I didn't actually realize that it was Coulter Gill fighting, because the Japanese didn't have his name on the screen.
Yeah, Black Mamba.
All they had was the Black Mamba.
Yeah.
And I thought, who on earth would name their child the Black Mamba?
I'd forgotten that Coulter actually went by that nickname, and I remember looking on the pay-per-view menu. And the last K-1 Heroes, where he actually knocked out Hideo Takaro in very similar fashion. I know he didn't knock out Cal, but he landed a knee. And I remember seeing on the preview it said Black Mamba, and I was like, I wonder if that's Coulter Gill. But, I was like, nah, it's got to be some other, Japanese wrestler or some kind of spectacle that was become very common in Japanese mixed martial arts promotions. But, yeah, it was Coulter, and... He's got a few losses, but he's also got some big wins, and he's definitely a noted striker. And from talking to him, he's one of those guys that just falls sort of in the cracks, if you will, of MMA and the actual realities of life, where he's just not at the point where he can make a lot of money, and he's a corrections officer and has to work full time to support his family. And you got to wonder what a guy like that might be able to do if he could train full time.
Well, isn't being a corrections officer kind of like training full-time?
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way, but maybe we should maybe have him on the show at some point and ask him. We've also had Jason McDonald on the show as a corrections officer. We should have asked him that as well. You also alluded to an American Top Team fighter, and that was Jay-Z Cavalcanti, who got the big KO in only 30 seconds against Hiroyuki Takaya, if I'm pronouncing that right. And... How'd that fight? Was it a flying knee that he landed?
Yeah, a flying knee right on the button, and that was it. That was all she wrote. It was beautiful. A thing of beauty, not really much to talk about, because he came out in, I think, 18 seconds, I think, or something like that. Landed the flying knee, and that was it. So it looked great for what it was with their fight. He looked good. Like I said, they're firing on all cylinders, these guys, so... We'll see. That would be a very interesting fight. It would be very interesting to see him square off against Menjivar.
Another result that I wanted to allude to before we get into some of the bigger name fights was Kotetsu Boku beating Alexander Franco Nogueira, or Paquina Nogueira, which, I really shouldn't say that's not a big name fight, but perhaps only for the diehard MMA fans or Japanese fans, because Nogueira was the Shudo 145-pound champion for several years, and Kotetsu Boku has beaten some top-flight guys, without question, but I think... As far as Nogueira, who left Shudo due to, I believe, a contract dispute or defending his belt, didn't defend it quick enough over the maximum time allotted to defend his title. He left for sort of greener pastures, if you will, as far as cash goes, to K1, and then he loses this fight. So that's got to be, somewhat of a stunning result, I would say.
And Boku's a killer B fighter, I think, and they were just allowed back. They were just allowed back in K1 after some shenanigans, I think. So, yeah, I think it was for Nogueira, it was unfortunate that they were allowed back in, because it was It was in Japan. I think it was billed as a super fight. You know, I was relatively surprised, but really wasn't much of a surprise if you saw sort of the pace of the fight.
Now, Melvin Manhoef taking out Crosley Gracie, who took it on only a couple days' notice. To his credit, for stepping up like that, they had trouble getting an opponent for Manhoef. How did he look? And what are your thoughts on him? Do you think he could be? Is he a guy at a? You know, I know he fought this at 187, and he also fought at 205. But is he someone that we should be looking for in the future, Melvin Manhoef?
Well, I think the big question about Manhoef, because he was such a pure striker, you know, he coming from just being a magnificent-looking Muay Thai fighter, the big question was, can he go in there and defend the takedown? Can he go in there against a pure grappler and defend the takedown and avoid having the old story retold once again? And the answer was, at least this time, unfortunately, Crosley didn't have much time to prepare for the fight as he was training Rodrigo, and was going to corner Rodrigo, but he had the stones to actually step in and took a tough loss. But Manhoef looked great. He looked fantastic. His fitness was great and his striking was good. Much of the fight was slightly boring, and actually some of what I understand was cut out in the rebroadcast. Manhoef looked great. The fight was kind of bad, as was the other Gracie, the Rodrigo Gracie fight. But Manhoef looks like a terror, and it will be interesting to see how he makes his way through the tournament as well. I think Manhoef might be the answer. Manhoef might be the answer, K1's answer to Vandalay. That's the way I take it anyway.
Wow, it's that's quite the a compliment. Were you told whether or not Crosley Gracie exhibited any real kind of takedown abilities, though? I mean, I think, you know, no discrediting, or I don't mean to, you know, cut down any of the Gracies, but sometimes their abilities to get a takedown have been questioned, depending on which Gracie you're talking about.
Well, that's the thing. It was an ugly fight, and it was an ugly fight because a lot of it was Gracie would shoot or attempt to clinch, miss the takedown completely, or Manhoef would defend it very well, and then Gracie would be on his back, and then, you know, the usual standing kick in the legs and so on and so forth. And that's interesting if you're going to shoot in or try and take advantage of that position, but there's too much digging around allowed in that fight, so it was really not something great to look at.
Now, there's a little bit of controversy surrounding the main event and in K1's flagship fighter now, taking Sakuraba away from Pride, of course, which is well documented by this point. And, you know, I also talked to someone from Japan, and they told me about, in great detail, the Smirnova fight. And, you know, from what I understand, it sounds like Sakuraba, you know, he was under the ropes and it looked like he was knocked out, or basically that there could have been there's a very strong case to be made that the fight should have been stopped early on and that Sakuraba was done.
Well, that's a sort of diplomatic way to put it. It was ridiculous. It was a travesty, but the whole build-up to the show was basically, you know, you saw things like Sakuraba's picture popping up in the corner, you know, sort of a little countdown, and him, you know, with other famous Japanese superstars. So, really, talking about putting all your eggs in one basket, K1 really did that with Sakuraba, and it was potentially tragic the way the fight worked out. Sakuraba was doing well on his feet as the fight started out, but there was a wild exchange, and he took a hard shot and went down hard, and basically, In the ensuing melee on the ground, basically dragged himself underneath the ropes. they didn't sort of fall there, dragged himself underneath the ropes, and instead of stopping the fight, they restarted the fight with Sakuraba barely being able to stand, and then literally, you know, he looked like he was semi-conscious for a minute and a half, literally taking the pounding of a lifetime, and Smirnova's Smirnov was literally punched himself out trying to knock out Sakuraba, and Sakuraba ended up regaining his senses, but it wasn't, you know, in 5 seconds, it wasn't in 10 seconds, it was over the course of a couple of minutes, and it was really, but, you know, like I say, it's potentially tragic, and Sakuraba, if he had any sense, would hold a deep grudge against K1 for allowing them to put him at such a risk, you know, coming from Pride, where they consistently put him at risk and really probably wrecked the last few good years of his career. K1 now is showing that they have no respect for him whatsoever as a fighter, and they won't allow a fight to be stopped that he's in. And they have a lot to lose, but they put themselves in that position. So,
well, that's the gamble they're willing to take. And I don't think Sakuraba would necessarily look at it that way. I understand your point of view and others' point of view, but, you know, then there's the diehard fans who are going to just say, and just playing devil's advocate, well, look, he came back, he got the win. You know, good for him, and I don't think anyone can take that away from him. The fact that he did come back and get the win, which is a remarkable thing to do. But absolutely, you're right. If you look back on some fights in the past that he's been involved in, and the one that really sticks out in my mind, because often I have people over to watch MMA, and often I have people over to watch pay-per-views who are not too familiar with the sport, and I try to educate them on it, and I go on and on about the safety record, and I remember with horror having some people like this in the room and watching his fight with Ricardo Arona, and you know, how he looked at the end of that round and the beating that he was allowed to take. And I mean, he wound up, he was in the hospital for several days after that, and that was just it was tragic. Tragic.
You can't help but just have a visceral response to that. You know, and you don't have to understand the rules to know that that's wrong, and that was wrong in the Arona fight, and it was wrong in this fight. You know, it's just simply, Sakuraba was in a state of semi-consciousness, and that's being charitable, and that's great. You know, if he can come back and fight, you know, now that's the sort of fight that will go down in the books. But really, what it went down in the books for me as is just another opportunity for something to go terribly wrong in MMA, like some fighter being killed or permanently injured,
mm-hmm.
and it just goes to show the disrespect for promoters for fighters. You know, the Sakuraba has been treated like chattel for the last 4 or 5 years, and I know that's part of the Japanese. That's part of the Japanese mystique, and that's part of their, that's part of their conception of what nobility is in terms of combat. But really, this is a sport. It's not. These aren't samurais fighting for their honor, and there's no one has to die in a sport. You know.
Well, absolutely, and you know what is the feedback you're getting about Semi Schilt and Don Fry, their fights, Shungo Ayama? I guess some could say that this is kind of a little bit of recycling old retired Pride fighters. I mean, Don Fry would clearly object to that idea, but what was the feedback on their fights?
Well, Semi Schilt, maybe I'm just overly pessimistic about him, and obviously he's a fantastic fighter. You know, he's a K1 champion and a recent K1 champion, so that championship is not even old. But I've always hated watching him in MMA, and this fight was no better. Although Kim the Korean didn't look particularly like he knew, but for a Olympic medalist judoka, he didn't do anything that impressed me in terms of getting Shields on the ground. And I think it was one of these bizarre things where he tried to stand a little bit and was just literally pummeled and ended the face and ended the fight pummeled, and it was actually triangled. So it was actually triangled by Shields, so he has everything to be embarrassed about, you know, pummeled on his feet and then submitted by a kickboxer. So I'm not sure if we'll ever see him back in MMA. Don Fry, if I wasn't so scared of him because of his deep sort of devilish voice and knowing that he might punch my lights out if he ever saw me, I can't say anything bad about him, although he actually looked not as fit as usual. You know, Fry's one of those guys, when he's fit, he's a specimen, and he certainly fell very short of that mark. Had a little bet on him. He didn't look to be in particularly great shape, and he was kind of I don't want to say showing his age because he still has the potential to look really good, but I don't know whether he took this fight on short notice or what, but he wasn't in shape, and Yamamoto was even worse, had even worse conditioning, and Fry just basically caught him with it didn't look like a particularly hard hook, but yeah, Yamamoto went down, and that was the fight. So both waste of time, I think, both the Schultz and Fry fights, but I don't know. I think never having immersed myself in the Japanese fight culture, I don't understand why Pride, has these fights. I don't understand who they appeal to, especially when you compare that to a fight like, like some of the first fights on the card, especially, especially Menjivar's fight. It's night and day. I don't understand why they love it so much, but they seem to keep appearing. And we seem to continually see people with the nickname of Giant, or people who are very large, sort of overaged North Americans fighting in K-1 and Pride still. So.
Well, I think if the UFC has any sense, they'll sign Don Karras Jr., the Mexican wrestler, who really gave Krokop a run for his money. And kidding.
I think the best signing could be... the best signing would be the 60-year-old Fray Tormenta, who was actually a real wrestling priest who lived in Mexico City for a long time and wrestled professionally to feed the orphans. So nothing would be better than getting him back in the ring and then squaring off against, I don't know, someone like Matt Hume or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be
Matt Hughes. I think
sweet.
Would be good.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, and this tournament could have been quite remarkable if Kid Yamamoto had not decided to pursue his Olympic wrestling dream, and if Genki Sudo had been able to compete, then he really would have had something. And of course, if Carlos Newton had been able to compete, then this would have been a card that could really test the limit of Pride without question. So
it had the potential for it, to be quite honest, it had the potential for card of the year.
Yeah,
really good.
Yeah.
And a couple of those key losses, especially Genki brings so much to the game, and I think I missed maybe his dancing actually more than his fighting. Although he did actually fight in the kimono that he danced in the last K-1 that he was in, which is pretty spectacular.
Yeah,
it looked like an old Bruce Lee movie, actually.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the more entertaining fighters out there. Well, Brendan, we got to get out of here. The show's getting a little long in the tooth. So take care and enjoy your return to lovely Edmonton and the River Valley city, as Edmontonians like to brag about.
We have a river valley here?
Yeah, it's supposed to be stunning. That's what Edmontonians
really?
Always tell me.
Well, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Excellent. I have something to do this weekend now.
Exactly. All right, bro, we'll talk to you soon.
All the best to you, my friend.